Well, speaking of hot, Congressman Mike Boss was there, and it was a dust up on the House yesterday. I've never known that a speaker's been barred from speaking, or the fact that the acting speaker who's up at the podium says, "That's it, I'm out of here, I'm walking."
Right, and it was a day of first. And it was kind of unique anyway in the fact that the piece of legislation they're pushing forward. Look, I don't have to agree in the way in which the president made his statement about the four very aggressive liberal members of the House. That being said, what he said was similar to what we used to do in the 70s. Love it or leave it, right? You remember that, Tom? If you don't like this country, then leave it. And it was not based on their race. It was based on their constantly aggressiveness towards socialism, towards those things that other countries have failed at. And I'm not defending the president on this. I just don't think that we need to go down a path where, let me explain to you that the one paragraph that is in the resolution, even though I might have agreed with the rest of the resolution, it says, whereas the President Donald Trump's racist comments have legitimized fear and hatred of new Americans and people of color. No. Let me explain what he did. He made a statement, he sent out a tweet, and we are so hyper, or there's a group that's so hyper and so anti-president, and so anti-Donald Trump, that they take it to this extreme. And let me tell you that when they finally passed this resolution, the next three speeches they were saying were, now we're going to impeach him because we passed a resolution that says he's racist. You know, but here's what's wild is, the same four that called him racist this week called Nancy Pelosi racist last week.
Right.
But Nancy Pelosi made an error in the fact, since 1801, it is, and whenever I was in the speaker's podium to be an active speaker for the many times I was over the last 4 years, you have to understand that since 1801, it has been a very clear rule of the House that you cannot go into personalities of the president. You can't claim that he's, you know, you can't, for instance, basically what Nancy said was, no, it's exactly what she said, that he is a racist. You can't do that, and you haven't been able to do that since 1801 and talk about a president on four. You can talk about the administration, you can talk about things that the administration does that you disagree with, but you can't make it personal. When she made it personal, it was then Doug Collins who said, I want her remarks stricken from the record. Now, understand this. That is a motion. That motion then needs to be ruled on by the parliamentarian on whether or not she did violate a rule. The parliamentarian then, things stopped for over an hour. So parliamentarians studied to make sure. Now, understand, the parliamentarian is not partisan. Parliamentarian, his job is only to admit the rules of the House. And you have two sets of rules. You have the long-time standing rules, which these are, and then you have the rules that are passed every 2 years by the majority party. This violated both of those rules, okay? And he ruled that it did violate that act that was that rule that was put in place in 1801, and that sure her comments would be stripped from the record, and when she was basically punished like that, the rule is that she can no longer speak on the floor for that day, for the remainder of that day. So what ended up happening is the parliamentarian ruled. The then acting person in the chair basically did something that has never happened before, and was angered over the fact that he didn't want the debate to go that far. He didn't want, but everything like that, and therefore he was not happy with the ruling on the by the parliamentarian. And he was not going to move forward with it, and therefore he says, I'm abandoning the chair, which never happens. So they put somebody else in the chair that then came up and said that was the parliamentarian's ruling, but now someone else then made the motion to override the parliamentarian's ruling, and then the two next two votes were specifically to say we weren't taking out of the record what Nancy Pelosi said, even though she violated the rules of her office and the rules of the House, and that she was not going to be taken away. You know, she could speak again on the floor that day. The problem is really this, Tom. What a waste of time when we're needing to deal with the border security, when we're trying to deal with that crisis at the border, when we need to be moving forward to look over what we're going to do with the debt ceiling that's coming up, and we're coming up on that, what we're needing to do as far as the infrastructure bill. And the list goes on and on of things, Tom, that we should be working on.
Yeah.
This
is
turning into exactly what the state of Illinois has done over the years. And we need to get back to doing the work of the people and quit playing partisan politics, and that's all this is about.
All right, quickly, we got some questions from listeners, and this interesting one listener just texted in. Does sanctioning the president mean that the House approves and stands behind what the four congresswomen said? Now, when we're talking about that, these members of the House, we're talking about some 240 that voted. Does that mean that they stand up for what those women said that the president took such offense to over a period of time, including, you know, a lot of personal insults?
So let me explain this. When a man, Congressman King, made some racist comments, we actually censored him through a resolution. This was earlier this year. We censored him through a resolution. We took actually, and he's a Republican. We all voted that he should be censored. He even voted himself to be censored, and then he was advised to step down, he did not. And then the Republican leader said, I can't go back and change what the voters did, but here's the thing. I can change that you have no committee. So he took him off all committees.
Right.
However, let's talk about those four. One in particular, Omar, Congresswoman Omar. She said some very, very anti-Semitic, racist terms earlier this year, really bad. And then when told to take that back, she doubled down on it. So then the House was going to take action against her like they did King. But here's what they end up doing, because there was such an uprising from the far left about the fact that they were going to take actions against her on her anti-Semitism, even the fact that there were many members that are Jewish on the Democrat side that were frustrated because this is all they did. They actually passed a resolution that did not mention her name and basically said, we hate hate.
Right. I remember it. Yeah.
That's the double standard for the listener that sent in. That's the double standard that is occurring here. And that's why the problem is occurring, because there needs to be members from the Democrat side of the aisle. We as Republicans going, no, this is going too far. Cut this out. But they're so afraid of not, and remember, these are the four that are called out. There's probably about 15 or 20 of them on that side of the aisle that are so far left, because they can change from day to day what is racism. They can change from day to day what is a term that may be politically correct. So there's no set standard that we can communicate by, because it's how they feel on any given day.
Right.
And Tom, you can't work under that. Understand right. that though I might disagree with you or someone else, I don't make it personal, but if all of a sudden I say something that you don't agree with, now I'm a racist?
Right. Which, you know, is which has become a literally between being a racist and a Nazi. Some of our listeners are sending in questions about some other items. Mike, I'd like to move along here for one of these. One of our listeners is, and apparently they're upset about a vote. A question for Mike Boss. How does he justify voting for H.R. 1044, the immigration law, which lifts a cap on the number of cheap Indian contract workers to fill jobs sought by American grads? It is a Democrat bill that is a green card giveaway that hurts American tech workers.
No, that's not actually true about what the bill is. There's a group out there telling that story. Let me tell you what that does. That does exactly what the president wanted, in the fact that it provides for a opportunity for those who are seeking to become U.S. citizens and also to seek their green card so they can become U.S. citizens. It gets away from the cap on certain countries, and let me explain why. It does that by then focusing on a matrix system in place. So instead of the lottery like you have that they have out there, which is just kind of willy-nilly on who gets it, it then all of a sudden allows for those people that are highly educated, that are they get extra points for those education points. Let me explain to you something that is really unique. So we have a cap on how many people can get green cards from each country. Okay, so if you're from a small country in Africa, you can come here and you can apply, and that list goes down very quickly. If you're from India, which we have, if you notice, we have doctors that are in most of our rural hospitals that are of Indian descent, and that many of them are here are here on visas. However, be able to get their green card and actually get citizenship, it may take them as much as 85 years because there is a cap, okay? That doesn't mean I'm going to turn our American jobs over to other people. That's not what it does at all. Matter of fact, but what one thing you need to realize is that many of our people who we're trying to get doctors to go to our rural areas that are U.S. citizens, and many times, a lot of our small communities, the only doctor they have is someone who has come here, that got their education in the United States, became a doctor, and then they're still working on a visa, and they are sent into our small communities to actually take care. So that bill does not give away American jobs to foreigners at all.
All right, we have another one that I'm personally kind of interested in. You saw Jesse Jackson as imploring the president, along with Jesse Jackson Jr., I believe, imploring the president to pardon Governor Rod Blagojevich. Good or bad idea?
Bad idea.
Yeah.
Let me tell you that the one person that knows everything that happened and everything that Rod did, remember I was the first one everybody says, oh, will you agree with the president on everything? And I said, nope, that's one I definitely don't agree with on. When I asked for Rod Blagojevich's impeachment, which was like 16 months before we actually did it, he had already done 11 of the 13 things that would have made him where he could be removed from office. But then the things that he did and the evidence showed was truly a violation of law at a level we had never seen, even in Illinois, by governors. And he is serving his time. When he gets done serving his time, understand what he did was federal crimes, not state crimes. And because he received, it's federal crimes don't give good time. You have to serve like 98% of your sentence. And he got a strong sentence. So no, I am not for the release of Rod Blagojevich. Rod Blagojevich's crimes were just that; they were crimes against the people and crimes against the government of the federal government on abuse of power by a governor to try to actually sell a position that affects the operation of the United States. No, he shouldn't be pardoned.
You know, when you were speaking earlier in the hour about all the things that went on in the House, that we should be looking at the House to do more productive items, it's interesting because my personal filter said, okay, which personal item would that be? Well, I would think the Lynn Small levy and flooding and helping the McClure right. And the other people in Illinois that have had an issue with flooding and the disaster relief bill, and talking about how that Lynn Small levy, which is, you talk about a can that's been kicked down the road. This can's been kicked to death in the road.
That's exactly correct, and that's why last week during a transportation infrastructure meeting and hearing, I specifically talked to J.D. James on the record, and you can actually see that online, dealing with this issue. He is aware of the issue, okay? He's so much aware of the issue. Then he came and met with me, and this was yesterday. We sat and talked because what's happened is the existing law doesn't allow us to use navigational purposes along with protection of property purposes, which makes no sense, especially in this case. And it's a rare case that it would have to be used. because it's usually in a bend of a river or something like that, like what we're doing with Lynn Small, that that's where navigation could change. And finally, it's got so bad that during this flood process, twice a barge was sucked in to the breach of the Lynn Small levee because the current was so intense. And understand that's eating away and trying to change the path of the, of that river there, that twice they had for navigational purpose that happened. Another time, a barge, some barge tugs actually broke free and actually were drawn into and then had to be retrieved and brought back out of the breach. So this was a case where what I had predicted in 2016 could happen is now happening. So based on that, he has agreed to start working with us through the Corps to try to get the language change necessary to actually get Lynn Small levee put back into place. It's not going to save the property down there. The property is already damaged. The, there is no way that you're going to be able to remove the sand off that what used to be good productive farmland land, ground,
right,
and actually put it in. But you can actually allow for navigation to not be hampered by the breach that has occurred there. That's why we're able to, that we're going to be working. The question is, though, can we get it done faster than the 2020 WERDA bill? My hope is yes, that's what we're trying for. If not, it's going to have to go in the 2020 WERDA bill. So then you're still looking, by the time that's passed, put into law, 2021, before they start work. So my hope is that we get it done a lot faster than that.
I've been waiting a long time. Hey, we're about out of time, but I want to hit one more thing. When it comes to controversies, the 13-star Betsy Ross flag was one of those that got a lot of people fired up, you know, and clearly a lot of people don't understand that Betsy Ross was a Quaker and there was no more people adverse to slavery than a Quaker. And, I mean, they were the abolitionists of their time, no doubt about it. And here they are, the Betsy Ross 13-star flag. Nike saying, no, that means, well, of course, they took a little advice, and you actually took some legislative action on the House floor last week.
Yeah, I actually took and put together a resolution that basically says that Betsy Ross stood for freedom. Betsy Ross is a symbol. Now, remember, we have very little history of Betsy Ross. We and most things that we have are stories that have been told over the years, but there's no real record of everything.
Right.
But what was known as the Betsy Ross flag has actually been in most recent history behind President Clinton, behind President Bush, and behind President Obama because they requested it to be there as the first flag of our nation when they took their oaths of office. And I think it was wild, and you know what? I've been called names before, so it doesn't bother me that if somebody brought this up, that a social media group, actually called me racist because I carried this resolution.
Right.
They don't know me at all. Yeah. They don't understand that I come from a biracial family. I have many family members. I don't care what your skin color is. I don't care what your gender is. I really believe that the Constitution is we are all created equal. And nobody's created special. But let me explain that if there's one thing that's not racist, it's the first flag of this United States and the story that went along with it.
Congressman Mike Boss. Mike, I really appreciate your time. Hey, we got 30 seconds.
Tom, thank you.
You still there, Mike?
Yeah, I'm here.
Just 30 seconds left on the air, okay? What should we be looking forward to the end of the week? What's going to be happening on the House floor the rest of the week?
Well, one thing, unfortunately, that's going to happen, and there is a problem with that, is they're going to try to move, and it's not going anywhere in the Senate, but they're going to try to move a minimum wage of $15 an hour nationwide, which will actually cost, the number crunchers around here believe it will cost more jobs than the population of the state of Maine. So, you know, that this is the type of stuff, but they're just positioning for the 2020 election, and that's real sad because, like I said, there's other things we should be working on.